listening to the Sunday Sermon Podcast from Faith Bridge Presbyterian Church in Frisco, Texas.
We're moving now to the Gospel of Luke. We started in Corinthians, and now we are in Luke chapter 4, verses 21 through 30. Luke 4, 21 through 30. Follow along on the screen, and I will read from the book. Remind us that we are people of the page. Luke 4, 21 through 30 goes a little bit like this. Then he began to say to them, he being Jesus, then Jesus began to say to them, today the scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing. And all spoke well of him, and they were amazed at his gracious words that came from his mouth. And they said, is this not Joseph's son? And he said to them, doubtless you will quote to me this proverb, doctor, cure yourself. And you will say, do hear also in your hometown the things that we have heard that you've done in Capernaum. And he said, truly I tell you, no prophet is accepted in the prophet's hometown. But the truth is, there were many widows in Israel in the time of Elijah, when the heaven was shut up 3 years and 6 months, and there was a severe famine all over Israel. And yet Elijah was sent to none of them except to a widow in Sidon. And there were also many lepers in Israel in the time of the prophet Elisha. And none of them was cleansed except Naaman the Syrian. When they heard this, all of the synagogues were filled with rage. They got up, they drove him out of the town, and they led him by the brow to the hill on which the town was built, so that they might hurl him off the cliff. But he passed through the midst of them, and he went on his way. One more time, pray with me. For this time and for this day and this chance to gather together as your people, we give you thanks and praise. If we can be so bold, we ask that you would speak to us. We are not picky about how you do, just that you would speak. Do it in word, do it in song, do it in prayer, do it in the presence of another, just speak. So that we might leave today with a better understanding of who we are and of whose we are. In your name we pray. So last week after church, we had our fellowship ministry meeting. I went to that meeting because part of my goal and part of my job is to support ministries in particular. That one I support more than others. I went to the fellowship meeting, and there we talked about, as you might imagine in fellowship, all of the things that are going on within the fellowship world. We talked about Wednesday night dinners, what to do with those. In particular, now that we have had a little bit of a problem with our caterer and lost him to another job. We talked about whether or not to do a new church directory. It has been a while since we did the last one, and we were thinking maybe it is time to do another one. We're going to hold off a little bit on that, but one will be coming, sure enough, in a little bit. We talked about the calendar, about the things that we have done in the past, the things in particular we did last year, what to keep, what to add, what to blow up, things of that nature. Here's the deal. You are going to be thrilled to know that we are keeping the women's tea, because it was such an awesome time, and I think it's important that we segregate as much as we can in the church, okay? So we are keeping the women's tea, and because it was such a great thing, we are also adding a men's tea. Now, I saw this, and I have to admit I did a double take, and it was hard for me to picture some of y'all sitting around a table around doilies and sipping tea and eating finger sandwiches, but some of y'all I could picture doing that. And then I looked at the calendar again. And I realized we are doing a men's tea, not T-E-A, but T-E-E. We are doing an outing at Top Golf in Allen, which is awesome. Yeah, if you have never been, Shane, you're with me on this? Top Golf is awesome. It is kind of like bowling and maybe darts or something like that, except with golf clubs. And here's the deal. If you have never swung a golf club in your life, you can still go and still have a good time. It is awesome. I'm totally pumped. Now, the fellowship group, they had us doing this like once a year. We're pretty clear we're going to do it once a month, maybe even once a week, right? So the men, we are going to be gathering, and we're going to be gathering at Top Golf. It is a cool thing, and I am pumped because I am a fan of gatherings in particular, golf outings, sure enough, right? And I say that, and it has been 10 years since I was last on my church golf outing. It was 2 churches ago, the church I was serving at the time. We had a guy in the church who used to be on the PGA Tour, okay? And he didn't make, like, Tiger and Phil money, but he was doing okay. But then he had a family, and he realized traveling and doing all of that stuff was not conducive to being the kind of parent he wanted to be. And so he quit the tour, And he started designing golf courses. And so we spent a weekend playing some of his courses. And that was totally cool because he is not all that far off on being on the tour. And so by playing golf with him, we got to see golf as it is supposed to be played. But we also got to spend time with him and talk about his courses. Why he put something here, why he put something there, what he liked about them, what he didn't, right? It's kind of, if you remember the story in Genesis, and you've got the whole heavenly council with God is creating things. It's kind of like sitting with God during that process and hearing God say, I put a mountain here, I put a lake here, it was just an awesome experience. And so I am on the last day playing with Bill. Bill is the former tour player, and I'm playing with Rusty. Rusty was one of my former interns. I talked a little bit about him last week. We are playing together, and we are playing a course for the second time that day, and we've come to the hardest hole on the golf course. You with me? It was a hole that had this huge carryover water, and it had beat us up in the morning, and we were not looking forward to playing it again. Now, Bill, he was not playing as he had before on the tour level, but he was still really, really good. I am a horrible golfer, but I am delusional enough at times to think I am good, and that is kind of dangerous. Rusty, who was playing with us, he was just starting, and he was terrible, and he would tell you he was terrible. And so there we are teeing off, we are tired, it's been a long weekend, Rusty is going first, he has no desire to hit the ball, and he hits a screaming line drive about 5 feet off the ground, doesn't even come close to clearing the lake, and drops in the middle of it. He throws two more balls in there, each of them worse than the first, and picks up and is done, figuring he'd already thrown in two or three sleeves of balls all together that day, and that was enough. I get up, and my theory on any sport is to swing as hard as I can in case I hit the ball, and so I am ripping it. And I hit this beautiful shot. It was amazing. I couldn't believe I did it. It starts off with this great trajectory. It was great. And then all of a sudden it just stops in midair. No, it didn't go under. And it turns immediate left. And it went farther left than it went straight. But it cleared the lake and then went out of bounds. Bill follows and he hits this beautiful little boring fade in the middle of the fairway. It was disgusting. And then he picks up his tee and he looks it up and he says, that, boys, is the difference between us. Now, Bill was typically pretty gracious. And so we were shocked at that. And he could tell by our face we were confused. And he said this. He said, Rusty, you didn't think you could hit the ball over the water. You didn't even want to do it. And so you didn't even come close. Chris, you were pretty sure you could hit the ball over the water, but you had absolutely no clue where it was going to go once you did. And I was just thinking about where I wanted the ball to land. We all, he said, got what we were expecting. And he was right. But he was also really, really gracious because there was so much more that was different between our games than our expectations. But what he was talking about was this. He was talking about the concept, maybe you've heard it, of self-fulfilling prophecy. Self-fulfilling prophecy. The idea that in most situations, we get what we were expecting. In most situations, we would get what we were expecting. Now, I had grown up playing sports, and so I knew this. I knew that if I was shooting a basketball and I was thinking I was going to miss, chances are I was going to miss. I knew that if I went to the plate playing baseball and I was convinced I was going to strike out, chances are I was going to strike out. The problem with me is the corollary didn't work. So I would shoot, and anyone who played basketball with me knows this. I was a black hole. If the ball came to me, I was shooting. I would shoot constantly convinced I was going to make it, and I rarely made it. I went to the plate convinced I was going to crush the ball, and still I would strike out. It is the reason I stand before you today as a preacher and not a professional athlete. What I learned in college, though, is this concept, self-fulfilling prophecy, it extends to our relationships as well. And here's the story. So I am in college. I am working at a church as a youth intern. We take our youth group to a homeless shelter in Nashville to feed some of Nashville's homeless. It is the first time our church has been at this particular shelter. And so in order for us to go and feed, we had to meet with the director. The director gave us the history of the shelter, told us how it was formed, told us how long it had been there, some of the great things it had done. He then told us what to expect about the evening. And then he began telling us about the guests and those we would serve and what it would be like to be with them and what we could expect from them. It was kind of an awesome overview. And then he said this. He said, if the guests ask you for anything, don't give them anything. He goes, and this is the hard part is people who come and volunteer because you have more than they do, and it's going to be natural for you to want to give to them. But he said this, all it does is to make it unfair for those who volunteer after you who may not be able to give like you can give. And it conditions the guests to be expecting people handed out from the people, and it doesn't help them live into independence. So that is what he told us. The night went great. We had served, everything had been awesome. And just as we were packing up, there was one guest left, and he sees me, and he comes over and he starts talking to me. I am thinking he's going to congratulate me on our youth and how awesome they did because they did great. And he looks at me and he is right in my face and he says, "I really like your shoes." And now he has said to me, not what I'm expecting. And in my mind, all I can hear is the director saying, "You can't give him anything." And so I'm embarrassed and I'm young and I'm not sure what to say. And so sheepishly I say, "Thanks. I can't give them to you." And he goes, "I didn't ask for them." And I realized in that moment, I had not given him the chance. I had not even given them the chance to be heard. That's how it can be with our expectations if we let them. They get in the way of our relationships. That's how it was in what we read together this morning. In what we read together this morning, we encounter Jesus, and he is just beginning his ministry. But even though he is just beginning his ministry, he has already done great stuff, right? He has been presented in the temple. Then he has gone and he has been baptized. And he has been tempted. He's gone back to the temple to teach. And as we encounter him again today, he is teaching. But he has taught and he has done a couple of healings before. And word of all that he has done and all that he has said has spread back home. And he is back in his home place and his people, they are loving it. And they are proud and they are excited to hear him. And they're a little bit shocked and maybe even embarrassed, wondering how it is that their hometown has birthed greatness. And they're saying, "Isn't this Joseph's son? How can it be?" And then he speaks and he reads. And now they are remembering him as he was when he was a little kid, right? That one who walked around in temple, the one who ran in the street, the one who carried baskets and water. And now they are attributing to him greatness that he hadn't even done before. And the legend is growing and growing and growing. And he is reading there and he closes the book and he starts speaking and everything goes down the pipes. "Surely you were going to say this," he says to them. "Surely you were going to say this." And they have said nothing of the sort. All they have done is praised him. All that they have done is been prideful. All that they have done is been excited about him being there, and he has ruined it in a second. Now, maybe this is how it was going to be, right? Maybe they were always going to be at odds. Because he was clear, he being Jesus, he was clear that the Pharisees and the scribes and the Sadducees, they had taken this great gift that God had given them of religion, and they had warped it. And they had transformed it into this weird form of the truth. And so he was going to challenge them and he was going to attack them and he was going to always prod and question them, and they weren't going to back down. They were clear that they were right and they were clear that he was wrong, and that by not backing down, they were fulfilling their responsibilities as ones who were protectors of the divine word and the divine interest. Maybe they were always going to be at odds. But we'll never know. Because that door shut before it ever even opened. How is it with us? How do our expectations affect our witness? Do we not invite our neighbors to church anymore? Not because we don't want them, but because they have said no so many times that we don't even now give them the chance to say yes. Do we not ask our coworker how he's doing anymore, because every time we do, all he does is whine and complain, and we know the story? Forgetting that we may be the only people who ask him how he's doing, the only people that lets him know that he cares, that we care, and that he is important and he is a person of value. Do we not reach out? Because we are so clear the world is so broken, who are we to do anything at all to fix it? Forgetting that by not reaching out, we are perpetuating that brokenness. Do our prayers lack passion? Not because we don't want to pray, but because we've had so many not answered, or at least not answered in the way we want them answered, that we have convinced ourselves we're not going to say it out loud, not yet, but maybe that prayer doesn't matter as much as we thought it did. Today, Jesus says, today the kingdom has been fulfilled. The scripture is real. Today the kingdom has been fulfilled, not tomorrow, not 5 years from now, not when we die. Today the kingdom is here. Perhaps as people of faith, if we expected to see it more, we might know more of the kingdom. And through us, others might as well. And the world today would look a heck of a lot more like we want it to look tomorrow and tomorrow's tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the FaithBridge Sermon Podcast. We'd love for you to come worship with us. You can find more information about us at www.faithbridgechurch.org or our Facebook page at FaithBridgePC.